Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
And so it begins.
And now, here with an unlimited supply of misinformation, is Mr. Know-It-All.
John, I love your show.
A lot of people say, John, why'd you come back? I said to play the temperature game with Steve Bertrand. You can text to 312-981-7200. Some of you are. This text says, I don't dislike John, but I much prefer Dave and Wendy. And Dave and Wendy will be on tomorrow morning, 10 to noon.
Or from noon to 1, you can listen on WGN Plus.
I understand some folks are actually having trouble accessing that today, and I'm sorry I'm not able to give you more information about that, but rest assured they'll get it fixed, or they won't, and then they won't do it.
Or just listen 12 to 1, and we'll give you the information as soon as we have it.
By the way, just some interesting text before we go to our guest real quick here, because it touches on a couple of things that we were talking about earlier. John, my favorite book when I was a baby and a toddler was Amy Krauss Rosenthal's. Steve, did you just mention her again in your last newscast?
I did not, no.
Amy Krauss Rosenthal, the much-loved artist and author in Chicago, has passed away. Many of us who follow her saw it coming. She had written about it, but she's died today of cancer. John, my favorite book, when I had a baby, and toddler was Amy Krauss Rosenthal's. It was called The Same Phrase Describes My Marriage and My Breasts. Before the kids, they used to be such a cute couple. It's just a bunch of funny stories about her kids and marriage. Wonderful. I'm so sorry that she's gone. Yeah. Big fans here. And we're sorry to see that, too. And then about Joel Stein on a moment ago talking about Instagram. John, my wife and I are middle school teachers. My wife recently had a conversation with students about Fakestagram, where students represent a fake side of their life, and then they have a more intimate group with a different account that they shared with their other friends. They understand the difference. Yeah, interesting. It's a 2:11 on WGN. This is John Williams. You now hear me weekdays from 1 to 3 and Saturdays from 10 to noon. It's good to be back. Mary Agnes Carey joins us now, partnerships editor and senior correspondent for Kaiser Health. You're going to pull her up for me right there, Elif. Mary Agnes, this is John Williams. How are you this afternoon?
Next time we get together.
I knew stuff like that was going to happen. There you are, Mary Agnes. How are you?
I'm great, thank you.
I'm touching buttons I shouldn't be touching. Today was kind of an interesting day. First, for those of you who don't know Kaiser Health, tell us a little bit about your organization. What do you all do, Mary Agnes?
We're a national not-for-profit healthcare news service. We're an editorially independent program of the Kaiser Family Foundation. We're not affiliated with the insurance company Kaiser Permanente. And we place our stories in publications all over the country, including the Chicago Tribune, the New York Times, USA Today, and at news outlets nationwide. So we are focused exclusively on healthcare policy and politics.
And not partisan that way?
Absolutely not. Not nonpartisan. Absolutely. We are not. We are not partisan in any manner. Rather, we are nonpartisan. We're just an objective source of healthcare information for folks.
I suppose other people will say that, and then somebody else will judge them to be failing that. I don't suppose any of us are perfect in that regard, but I appreciate that that's the objective. You're not rooting for either side in these debates.
I think you wouldn't have publications all over the country running our copy unless we were staunchly nonpartisan.
So was today a big day? I mean, wasn't the CBO supposed to give its scorecard on Obamacare light or Trump care or whatever we're calling it?
They are. The Congressional Budget Office, also known as you mentioned, the CBO, is the congressional scorekeeper. And we are awaiting that information even as we speak. The thought was those numbers would come out today. We haven't seen them yet. They might still be released. But this is kind of the roadmap, if you will, on the Republican healthcare alternative. How much will it cost? How many people will it cover? how much will people's premiums change, who might get coverage under, or who not receive coverage, rather, as well, under the Medicaid changes. So it's kind of, everyone's kind of looking at that to get this objective view.
It's a report, but do they give it an A+ or a 92 or something like that overall?
No. They just give numbers. They will say this many million people would gain or lose coverage. This is how what the effect is on the federal treasury. This is how it would change the Medicaid program.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more of a numbers report.
Sean Spicer and others are saying, though, the president's spokesperson and others, Kellyanne Conway, pick 'em, that the CBO failed, though, in sort of anticipating Obamacare. So, you know, be careful how much stock you put in their sort of assessment in advance of the Trump version. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, there's always going to be some margin for error, right? For example, the Congressional Budget Office, the CBO, scored a higher number of people losing their employer health insurance under the Affordable Care Act. That was an area where they were off. As it turns out, most employers have kept people on their health insurance plans. They didn't dump them into the individual market. And other aspects, whether it's how much the bill has cost or some other enrollment figures, I think they've been pretty close. The changes it would make on the Medicare program, for example, some of those Medicare cuts that mm-hmm. Republicans are retaining in the package. So it is by its nature an estimate. But the thought here is that having such a uniform presentation from the Trump administration that the numbers are going, you know, that you can't trust CBO or they're bad at their jobs or, you know, a variety of things they're saying. The thought really is it's a defense against what they think is probably not going to be a favorable number because the Republican proposal is so different in many ways from the Affordable Care Act.
Well, I appreciate that it's different, but that doesn't necessarily make it worse. It sounds like they actually think they're going to get a bad score. And if I'm to believe the CBO, then there must be problems with it. What are the problems that everybody's anticipating?
For example, that the subsidies, these advanceable, refundable tax credits in the Republican bill are absolutely going to be lower in many cases for individuals who now may get some premium assistance from the Affordable Care Act. There's also going to be some people who benefit by those Republican subsidies because they are geared more on age than income. That's one area. Another area to look at is the fundamental change that the proposal would make to the Medicaid program. Again, this is the shared federal state program that has about 70 million people on the rolls, the poor and disabled. But Medicaid also pays for half the births in this country and something like 2/3 of the nursing home care. So the Republican bill would shift it to a capped allotment, a set amount of money versus matching state spending on a percentage basis as it does now. So the thought is that may lose mm-hmm. people to may cause people rather to lose their Medicaid coverage and shift a lot of those costs to state governments and possibly individuals.
Well, if I work for WGN Radio or Ace Hardware and I have Blue Cross Blue Shield or Cigna or one of those employer-provided programs, am I going to see a change, or is this just for people that are buying it on the exchange?
You might see some changes might touch you. For example, if the end result were that perhaps services that you now receive with no copay or out-of-pocket sharing, right, like
right.
preventative care, or if you took your kids to the doctor, if that provision were changed, that might affect your particular plan. But as we know, our employers can make a lot of changes in our plans from year to year. They can drop the number of plans that are offered.
Right, but if I may, Mary Agnes, for instance, when I go to the doctor, I may pay a $10, $20, $50 copay, but it's manageable. And actually, mine is less than that. I mean, it's maybe $20. That's really nice. My prescription drugs are not that high. And when they tell you what it is, you know, I pay $30 for something, and then I find out it was $300. I thank my lucky stars I have a decent insurance plan. Many, many, many Americans do. If that's tweaked a little bit, I could live with that. But for those people, is it safe to say that their lives will not be that radically changed with this?
Not necessarily. Yeah, I mean, they wouldn't necessarily be changed from the Republican health plan itself. But the point I want to stress here is that employers make their own decisions every year about coverage.
Yeah.
And the exact thing you're talking about, instead of raising premiums, a lot of employers have been shifting those costs to employees in the sense of a higher deductible for drugs or an office visit, that kind of thing. So those are the changes that have been happening and may continue to happen that are separate from this current debate from the Republican proposal to overhaul the ACA.
But isn't the idea that they're going to give you some sort of rebate or some sort of tax credit for those costs that you pay out of pocket?
But that's only if you don't have an offer of employer coverage. If your employer is offering you coverage, you can't qualify for these rebates.
Understood. But for the people that are using it, if if they're using these tax credits, will they be better off in this new plan than they were under Obamacare?
Well, it depends. It depends on where you live. It depends on what your age is, and it depends on your income. And here's what I mean: the Affordable Care Act really geared these credits to one's income, right? What happens in the Republican alternative is they are really gearing it more to age with just a slight adjustment for income. Under the Republican plan, if you were 30 or under, you'd get a $2,000 tax credit. If you were 60 or older, you'd get a $4,000 tax credit. And there's no adjustment in the Republican plan for the local cost of insurance. Under the Affordable Care Act, or some people call it Obamacare, if you live in a high-cost area, that's figured in the subsidy, which is also adjusted for your income. Under the Republican proposal, again, it's mostly age. The only adjustment for income is those credits start to drop if you are an individual and you make more than $75,000 a year, or you're married and you make more than $150,000. So if you are an older person who is not does not make a good income and lives in a high-cost area, that $4,000 tax credit is probably a lot less than you are currently receiving on the Affordable Care Act if you're getting a subsidy.
Mary Agnes Carey from Kaiser's on the line. You may have a question or a comment about all of this, and I've got some too still. If you want to join us, 312-981-7200. You can call or text to that number, 312-981-7200. We'll pick it up here in a minute on WGN. Got some texts. We'll read some of them, and we'll take some of your phone calls, too. 312-981-7200. Although I do just want to give a quick shout-out here because they've been in the studio so many times, and they listen to us in Honolulu and have been longtime WGN listeners. Welcome back, John Williams. Todd and Chrissy listening to us on Oahu. Nice to hear from them. It's 224 on WGN. I'm John, and this is my new home. If you're just joining me for the first time or maybe the multiple time, I'm now on WGN Radio from 1 to 3 in the afternoon. Bill and Wendy are still on in the morning, and you'll be able to hear them starting tomorrow on the stream as well. Mary Agnes Carey, Partnerships Editor and Senior Correspondent with the Kaiser Health Group, is on the line. And we're talking about the CBOE. Actually, we're talking about the Republican plan for health care, for revising, repealing, and replacing Obamacare. Since we started that commercial break, to your knowledge, Mary Agnes, has the CBO come in with their numbers yet?
They have not. I just checked, and the thought is possibly this evening. So stay tuned.
Yeah, okay. Is this a number they'll come up with? How many people will lose coverage?
That's one of the numbers, sure. How many people will lose coverage? How many people could gain theoretically if they found that as well? What's it going to cost the federal treasury? What are the impacts on the Medicaid program? That's another one of the key areas we're watching.
And I guess that's just their educated guess. That's their best effort on what they think is going to happen, right?
Right. This is an agency full of some of the nation's best economists that are experts in predicting and analyzing congressional legislation. So this is something that has been used in agency for years in Washington, and people look to it and trust it.
Let's pick up a couple of phone lines. We'll start with, I think it's Debbie on line 3. You're on WGN. Go ahead, Debbie. What's your question?
My question regarding the Republican replacement is, they're talking about it being based on age rather than income. Will that then make it more difficult for older people to get employment or maintain their employment?
I think they're two different things. If you have employment or you started a job, you would not be eligible for these tax credits. So the way to look at it is you've got the employer marketplace, where most of us, something like 160 million people in this country, get coverage for themselves and their dependents at work. That is separate from what the Republicans are talking about, which would be done for people who are in the individual market.
It seems to me, thanks for the call, Debbie. I hope that helps. Everybody should have coverage, or coverage that is so affordable that, you know, they have access to it. I know that's not written into the Constitution, but when I get to be king, Mary Agnes, everybody in America will have affordable health care. Would you say that they do that now? And would you say that this still allows for that?
I would say this. I would say that both Republicans and Democrats alike agree with you. They want people to have affordable health care coverage that takes care of their needs, takes care of their families and themselves. The biggest disagreement is over how to do it. Democrats have traditionally wanted to have a larger role for the federal government. Republicans want the government not to have the major federal role in the sense of prescribing whether or not you have to have insurance, how much it has to cover, how much it has to cost, what percentage of your income do you have to pay.
Mm-hmm.
Democrats tend to be more prescriptive, if you will, with a federal prescription, where Republicans are talking about a lot about this now, that they want to leave this up to individuals. Even the decision about whether or not to have coverage, most economists would tell you that you should have a mandate, a requirement that people have health insurance or pay a fine. And Democrats have felt that way. That's in the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah.
Many Republicans say, let's just add a surcharge to the premium to incentivize you to get in, but not require you to do so.
Should I read much into the fact that the AARP and the AMA and conservative and liberal groups are against this? I mean, maybe that happens all the time. Or is that noteworthy?
It is noteworthy in the sense that you've got the American Medical Association, the American Hospital Association, as you mentioned, AARP and other groups, other physician groups coming out in opposition to this. I sort of see that, and I definitely pay homage to it. But the other reality we're dealing here with is the political reality. And we heard Speaker Ryan, Paul Ryan, talk about this, the Speaker of the House last week, as he's talking to his caucus, to Republicans. This is our best opportunity to pass this repeal and replace. We campaigned on it. We've got to do it. There's all these thoughts that they're going to get hammered, they being Republicans, in the 2018 midterms if they don't do this. So that also has an incredible push on members to see the opportunity, to see the timing. And let's face it, Republicans want to do a tax overhaul. That's going to take a lot of time and a lot of political capital. They want to do an infrastructure bill. They know that they've got a set amount of time, really, before they head into the midterm. So it's that political pressure is also incredibly dominant. But absolutely, the fact that you've had all these medical groups come out in opposition to it, and these were all groups that the Obama administration courted to get support for the Affordable Care Act, it's going a very different way this time.
Lots of calls and questions for you. Let's do this. Can you join us maybe later this week after we get that report from the government? And maybe we've all had a chance to sort it out a little more this week. And we'll just take calls for you, Mary Agnes, and let people kind of get their specifics answered from you.
That'd be my pleasure.
Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
You got it. Thank you.
From Kaiser News, the health reporter, Mary Agnes Carey.